Today's episode of Tech Talks on the Unsettled Media Podcast Network is brought to you by Tech Impact, focused on unlocking prosperity by embracing technology. For more, head to techimpact.it.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kathy Simpson, and this is the Tech Talks with Kathy Simpson podcast. On today's show, we're continuing our discussion on cybersecurity. We're going back to where this focus all started here in New Brunswick, which was at the University of New Brunswick. The focus, the vision, the programming, and the building of the Cybersecurity Canadian Center of Excellence grew out of the Faculty of Computer Science at UMB, and it has been on a steady growth path ever since. In this episode, we're going to cover the Masters of Applied Cybersecurity program, the BRICS program, the importance of private sector partnerships and sponsorships, hands-on training and research, just a couple of the topics we're going to talk about today. Did you know that right now there are 66 people working at the CIC in multiple roles and one in five have a PhD? That's a lot of talent, research, and collaborating that's enabling the cybersecurity cluster to grow. Now for our guests. In today's episode, I get to talk with Dr. Luigi Benedicenti, Dean of the Faculty of Computer Science at the University of New Brunswick. This is Luigi's second time on our podcast, and I'm thrilled to have him again. He has a passion for growing this faculty, building talent, and cybersecurity is one growth area for the university. He has fallen in love with New Brunswick, just like so many of us. And Luigi will go on today to share more on the master's program, the collaboration with the CIC, and creating a place for our ecosystem to thrive. Joining Luigi is Dr. Ali Gurbani, the Canada Research Chair in Cybersecurity, and the director of the CIC, which he founded in 2016. He was the UMB Dean of Computer Science for just under 10 years and is an international expert in network and information security, complex adaptive systems, and critical infrastructure protection. Ali has been in New Brunswick for 30 years, and he's been instrumental in the growth of the CIC and the work that's done there. He's been such a leader in building the master's program and growing our international brand and reputation for the work that's happening at UMB. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talks with Kathy Simpson. And this is part three of our series on cybersecurity. And so thrilled to have two great guests today. And I'm going to get started. I'm going to introduce you to Luigi. And I love the way Luigi says his last name. So please give us your full introduction. And what's really fun today is Luigi's been a guest before. So we're so thrilled to have him back. Luigi's the Dean of the Computer Science Department at UMB and has a love for cybersecurity. So Luigi, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and what you're doing here at UMB?
Certainly. Thank you, Kathy. And it's great to be back. My name is Luigi Benedicenti, and I seem to be one of the few ones, even in Italy, who can pronounce it. So I'm glad to be able to do that for everybody here. I was, in fact, born and raised in Italy, but I started becoming interested in computers. So I had a degree in computer engineering, and then a doctorate degree in computer engineering, which led me to Canada. And I started working in universities immediately afterwards. I have been interested in cybersecurity for quite some time, perhaps from the point of view of the user of a system where it was really difficult to fix some things like the printer not working, and sometimes hacking the system was the only way in which we were allowed to intervene. So that's my initial exposure to cybersecurity. I consider cybersecurity the equivalent of real-life locks and keys in homes. In most cases, we don't need them, but when we need them badly. And I think that cybersecurity for software is an integral component, something that we can't live without, and that has sparked an interest that continues today. I started at the University of Regina and now at the University of New Brunswick. It's been a crazy, fantastic, incredible ride, and I'm so lucky to be here.
And how many years have you been here now, Luigi?
This is my 22nd.
In Canada?
In Canada, yes.
And how many years at UMB?
I came to the UMB in 2017.
So I believe you replaced our other guest on the show, Ali Gorbani. Would that be correct, Ali?
Yes, I had the privilege and honor to welcoming Luigi to our faculty as our new dean, correct?
And you've been around UMB computer science a long time, maybe not from the very beginning, but tell us how long you've been around, a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, Kathy, and hello, everyone. Like Luigi, I have a background starting from my birth country, from Iran. I have done my bachelor's degree in Iran and then moved to United States to George Washington University and did my master's degree at that university. And later joined UNB, did my PhD here at UNB. This is my 30th year at UNB. I joined UNB at the end of 1990. But it's also my 40th year this year in academia. I did join as a faculty member after finishing my master's degree in Iran, and worked as a faculty member for some time before deciding to do my PhD. Go ahead.
That's unbelievable. I came to New Brunswick in 1990, so we've been around these parts the same amount of time.
That's right.
But tell me, what was the Department of Computer Science like in 1990?
So the Department of Computer Science at that time, or I would say that Faculty of Computer Science at that time still consisted of those who put the foundation of computer science at UNB. And the focus of those founders and initial folks who worked at the Faculty of Computer Science was, of course, quality education in undergraduate as well as graduate program. There was a good understanding then to establish co-op program. So as the second oldest co-op program in the country, in Canada, they realized very early on that co-op can be a great avenue to expose our students to industry work early on and get them to be educated here, not only on the fundamentals and theoretical and lecture-based, but also on a hands-on training with industry. So I think that was the community that I joined, which I vividly remember that how welcoming and how great a small community we had pushing the agenda of computer science in New Brunswick.
And is it true that we had the actual first CS department in the country?
So, Kathy, there is a terminology in academia we use that I want to distinguish. So there is a difference between department and faculty. No, we're not the first department of computer science, albeit that computer science courses started to be taught here in late 50s. And then early 60s, computer science became a program and later a department and then continued becoming a school, all of them within the Faculty of Engineering. Then the computer science folks decided to separate from Faculty of Engineering and become a faculty of their own. So we became the first computer science faculty in Canada, not being attached to another faculty like engineering or science.
Okay. Yeah. So some rivalry even back in the day, I would expect of those early days. So Luigi, you said you've been involved in cybersecurity a long time, and it's obviously important. When did you get a sense that cybersecurity was going to be important to the education of students, but to your example of the real life locks and keys in the home? It's a great analogy. When did that really materialize for you?
I think that the initial thought about this occurred to me when I realized that computer science and computers were no longer something that stayed in a separate domain, but it had become something that the public had started to use. At that point, of course, that meant that we no longer had a very limited number of people who knew each other that were sort of wearing some sort of a special apron with computer science written on it, but everybody was able to access a computer. That was probably in the late 70s, early 80s, when computers became so popular and the networks came into play. At that point, it was extremely important to start protecting the information and making sure that we had the correct attribution for the things that we did in what had become at that point a public forum. So little by little, I became aware of the fact that there was the necessity for protection. But at that point, cybersecurity was in its very infancy. It wasn't a discipline itself. And I think that I owe it to fantastic researchers like Ali, who actually have brought forth the issue and made it a lot better understood than it was ever before.
So, Ali, you were the dean of the computer science department at UMB, and obviously you saw what Luigi saw, but you really took a big leap to what has now become a pretty important piece of UMB. So what was it that got you seeing we needed to do even more?
So, Kathy, this goes back, of course, in late 1990s when I recognized that I want to do research and development in cybersecurity. Then we would call them network security and information security. And with the understanding that I, coming from the machine learning AI background with my PhD, I did my PhD in artificial neural networks. Recognizing that this technology or this fundamental approach of AI and machine learning and data mining are very much suited for doing cybersecurity research, especially in the area of intrusion detection in the early days, intrusion prevention and mitigation strategies. But the main interest started early 2000 with the establishment of Q1 Labs, which we became a research arm of that company. And we from that, we actually created a new culture within our faculty, that we can work closely with industry partners to make sure that they end up being successful, grab some market share, market for their technology, and help them to improve their intellectual property. So we actually, right from 2003 or 2004, we started Friday afternoon meetings with Q1 Labs folks every Friday, nonstop for over 10, 11 years until they were acquired by IBM. And we continued with IBM after that as a research arm of the IBM operation here in Fredericton, New Brunswick.
But it started the beginning of so much more of that collaboration and partnership between the private sector and the university. And it seems like you were in the middle of a lot of that in the early days, Ali.
I believe so. I mean, we can claim, I mean, I'm not saying it too decisively, we can claim that we actually coined cybersecurity as an industry, meaning that cybersecurity can become an economic enabler for Canada, for our province in this case. And I think in 2016, the government has realized what I'm saying, that we can actually, through cybersecurity operation, bring more companies here, develop more intellectual property, either for other companies to commercialize, or establishing company of our own. So the entrepreneurship was a core pillar of our activities over the years. As you know, we have established three companies from our research group, plus Q1 Lab would be four fairly successful, I would say, companies that came from this area. And that proven the fact that cybersecurity can be economic enabler. It's not only a problem, it's an opportunity. Opportunity that we use in order to train more people, to develop more and better solutions, and to also create new operations and create jobs in companies that we help to establish here, or companies that we establish ourselves.
So you got to tell us the names of the other companies, just in case our listeners
are. Q1 Lab, Centrum Security, which acquired by Nielsen from the United States. Eyes Over, which is still in New Brunswick working. And Cyderion, which is a new company in the area of software resilience. Meaning that we basically make sure that the software in the way of attacks are resilient enough to outweigh the attacks. So this new company is actually very promising from perspective of new technology that we are spun off from this company.
So if you think about that, I mean, I think it's brilliant. We've heard definitely the most about Q1 Labs, but we've definitely heard more about some of the startups coming from cyber. There's more coming from other areas of the computer science and the engineering departments, et cetera. So in order to make that happen, you need talent. So Luigi, you're, you know, the dean of the undergrad program. We talked about that a couple episodes ago. Let's talk about the master's program, because we're talking about research and development and talent development, and you need to bring those people. So you've taken it a step further. We've now got a master's program here in applied cybersecurity. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. I have to preface all this with the fact that when I arrived, the Master of Cybersecurity was a very solid proposal that Ali had spearheaded. So it was a very easy job for me to endorse it completely and to bring it forth to the faculty. The Master of Applied Cybersecurity is what we could call a professional program. What it is, it's a program that takes graduates that have already a good knowledge of computer science and specializes them in cybersecurity, specifically the network aspect of cybersecurity, but also privacy aspects, information protection, and a number of other specializations that allow these students to learn the essentials, but move a little further and then work with companies that bring real-life problems, therefore becoming trained professionals ready for the workforce as soon as they finish their program. And their program is only 1 year long. So in that sense, it's certainly an amazing program. Usually, we take students starting in September, and they finish at the end of summer, taking four courses between September and December, four courses between January and April, and then a single course that is a full project that involves industry and that is relevant to what they have studied as well during the summer, after which they are ready. And to apply for this program, of course, one has to wait a little bit because our application starts, I would say, in early summer, but then decisions are made in February, which means that applicants have until February to send their complete applications, after which we start deciding who comes in the program. And it's a merit-based program only. So we take the cream of the crop, because unfortunately we don't have that many seats. There's about 30 at this point, and we have a good number of applications, especially this year. We're close to 100. So it's a 1 in 3 acceptance rate. And we are fighting very hard to expand as much as possible and to have as many of those students accepted in our program.
So it's been a challenging year. You've been operating the program virtually, I assume. How are things going?
Things are going very well, so much so, in fact, that we have been able to essentially repeat the same experience that students would have if they were to be on campus, virtually and remotely. This has been very useful for the laboratories that have become virtual. And thanks to the help of the Canadian Institute for Cybersecurity, we've been able to create what we call virtual machines that are essentially computers that run away from the user in the cloud and allow students to take those labs, use these machines, and experience the exact same experience that they would have if they had an hands-on lab remotely. That's very good because it allows also for the lack of mobility that unfortunately this year and the year before has introduced on us. So we can teach our courses as we call it alternate delivery mode. So essentially that means online, and students can only connect that way. That avoids things like the differences, for example. By recording our lectures, we also allow students to follow them remotely after. And that deferred way of taking lectures makes it much easier to access. So at this point, the whole world is able to study.
So the projects at the end, they're called capstone projects. Have I got that correct, Luigi?
Oh, yes, indeed, yes.
So talk to us, because these aren't just your everyday projects. These are hands-on working with the private sector for the most part. Talk to us about what kind of experience would I expect to get there as a student?
Well, and I hope that Ali will add on to what I say. In general, what that means is that there is a match that is made by our program coordinator. This match is between students and companies that have real-life problems that they wish to explore. These problems might not necessarily be critical to their survival, because, of course, we want to make sure that they are well-addressed, but they are real issues that have to be explored in both a conventional and, to a certain extent, a little bit less conventional way to find out if solutions exist that perhaps haven't been found before. That's why we're talking about a master level kind of project. It is more involved, more in-depth, and more rewarding for the companies, but of course for the students as well. And that's why this is the only thing that students do during the entire summer. They prepare first in fall and winter, but when summer comes, they're dedicated exclusively to these projects. They have assistance from the Canadian Institute for Cybersecurity. They can have meetings, interactions, reporting with the companies that have actually selected the projects for them. And together, they come to a conclusion that essentially is really a transition, a threshold to the beginning of their career.
So, Ali, how does it feel to listen to Luigi talk about the program that you are so integral to getting established at UMB? Must feel good.
It does, and I'm glad seeing Luigi explain the program very well. I really don't need much to add. I want to emphasize that from the beginning, the thought or the vision was that we want to put in place a program that would realize three main goals. We want to give our students, our graduates, a solid fundamental understanding of cybersecurity field from various angles, from software security to network security to crypto to digital forensics to privacy, etc. That was one major goal. And second was to realize the hands-on or applied nature of cybersecurity. I always say that cybersecurity is a practical problem requiring practical solutions. And therefore, in this program, we make sure that the mix of training and labs and hands-on experience would realize that goal as well, that the students come out very much hands-on people. And the third goal was that can we mix the concept of co-op in this program? So our capstone project is actually a concept of co-op, working on a real-world problem with industry partner. In this case, we have the industry partner as co-coordinator or supervisor of the course with our people. So when the students finish, they have the fundamentals, they have the applied, and they also have the industry experience solving a problem from the start to the end. And that tree actually comes very well in this program. And I'm very pleased that the program is picking up. As Luigi mentioned, we probably have more than 100. I'm thinking that by end of February, which is a deadline, we would have anywhere close to 120, 30, maybe 50 applications. And that means quality of students coming to the program, meaning that we can actually pick the quality of students joining us in this program. So it feels good. It feels good that university is behind it. It feels good that university is recognizing resources are needed because CIC, as Luigi knows, helps now delivering this program. But as we move on, for scaling up, we need, of course, more resources in order to go from 30 to 50 or 60. We need those kind of resources. And university is behind this idea for sure. I know I heard it and they are.
And I will add as well that this is a very good opportunity for companies that actually wish to enter or that needs to look at the cybersecurity talent pool to participate and perhaps get in touch with what I would consider optimal candidates for a job in cybersecurity. So I would say, if you're listening to this and you're interested, don't hesitate to get in touch with us. Sorry for the plug, but I think it's important.
No, we're going to put links for the application and all of that. That's why we're here. So I'm going to put you both on the spot with this question. You're bringing great quality of candidates to come to the undergrad program, but the master's program as well. How are we going to keep those students here in Atlantic Canada?
So go ahead, Luigi. I can answer this, but you could go ahead, please.
Of course, it's putting us on the spot, but I think that we need what I call an integrated strategy. So one important trend that we are witnessing in the world is that cities are no longer the most important and relevant spot for new talent to work in. There is a considerable interest in places that are a little more humanized and are available and open for all sorts of collateral activities that in general cities make it a little more difficult, like, for example, the lack of commuting or the existence of a green space or the possibility to have easy access to trails and all sorts of other interesting things that I think create a great value for New Brunswick. New Brunswick, in my opinion, is a postcard, and we need to make sure that that postcard fits in the heart of the people that come here. And I think that especially now, it is much easier to appreciate what New Brunswick offers in terms of security, in terms of safety, in terms of comfort, and to a certain extent, in terms of life and specifically quality of life. So that's an aspect that I think we need to emphasize. The second thing that I think is extremely important, and we don't talk much about, but luckily we have you to talk about for everybody, is the digital economy here in Atlantic Canada and in New Brunswick in particular. This is growing, and that means that there is talent demand. Now, of course, everybody always looks for only one of the parameters, and in many cases, people will be looking at salaries, for example, as the only indication of their quality of life. And the fact is that's going to be a real mistake if you don't consider both aspects, what it takes to live in a place and what you can receive before living in that place. The kind of cost-benefit analysis that a dispassionate mind can do here makes, in my opinion, New Brunswick a clear win. And we don't tell this story enough. So we need to be able to tell the story a little more. And I'm sure that everybody that comes through our New Brunswick program will see the convenience of staying here and the advantages it generates. Because even when you are in New Brunswick, given the infrastructure we have, you're truly global.
All right. So, as I said, I've been here 30 years, so I can call myself New Brunswickan. I'm glad that you put a good face for New Brunswick from various aspects, Luigi. I want to be a bit blunt on the other side, and that to answer this question, which is a multifaceted question, as you know, I've been dean from 2008 to 2017. 9 years, and prior to that, assistant dean, and so on. So we see the flood of students going outside the province. I remember when I was dean at one point, I was telling the government that maybe we should talk to other jurisdictions that they should give us head tax. Any head that we ship to them, they send us money because we train them and ship them to other parts. However, I think I mentioned it to a few premiers too. This is an issue of deep, multifaceted criteria that we need to address, that both the government, the provincial government, the municipalities, and other organizations and industry should come together and solve it. So New Brunswick is great from various aspects. But for example, we don't have infrastructures for all different cultures. So it's not a place that people feel they can go and get the type of services that they need from their type of culture and the one that they brought up, whether it's a religious or whether it is from other perspective. We've got to fix those issues that makes people not to feel that this is not a place to stay, and maybe other places have better infrastructure. So we have to solve that, and I'm glad that the province came along, and Kathy knows this, along in terms of multiculturalism. But we still have a long way to go to compare ourselves with other parts who've been very successful in bringing all these talents and brain powers and economic and money into their mix to basically flourish their economy. We've got to really work on that hard to make sure that the face of the government representative of the society.
The whole picture.
The face of the university senior management should be representative of the community. So once we solve this problem, I think especially the social aspects, from my perspective, is what is important. Yeah, Luigi, you mentioned maybe salary is not as important, or maybe important, but not as much. People probably would accept it, but as long as they socially, culturally, and structurally actually have a society that they feel they can be here. So that's on the other side, I hope that it doesn't come across as negative, but it definitely has something that we have to take into account.
Well, I'm really glad that we're having these conversations, because probably not what I would have expected you to say, Ali. I would have expected you to be more focused on we need more technology infrastructure. We need more of this, but I like hearing that. But you're playing a role. I want to dive into the CIC, for those of you listening, the Canadian Institute of Cybersecurity. And it's something that you've been integral in starting, and it is helping to keep talent here. You've got a whole boatload of people working and researchers who have done their master's here and their PhDs and all of that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the CIC and what you're trying to do there?
Sure. So CIC is based on the fact that we realized later in 2015 that cybersecurity is more than IT problem. It is a multifaceted, multidisciplinary problem. And therefore, we need the involvement of researchers and practitioners from different domain and fields. IT, engineering, social sciences, you name it, psychology, sociology, business, education, law, they all have a role in building a solid solution in cybersecurity. So CIC is a multidisciplinary institute with three main goals: talent development, or as governments call it, workforce development for the province and, of course, for the country as well, research and innovation. And in that area, we actually, our main focus is working with industry on practical problems, solving their problems, and then entrepreneurship and innovation. That's something that we want to help major government institutions like CSC and others, as well as industry by providing them IP that can be commercialized. Right now, the institute has 66 people. Consisting of faculty member, associate faculty member, research associates, postdoctoral fellows, master and PhD students, technical staff, developers, security architects. And one in five of our members have a PhD. And a good number of them actually recently staying within the province, whether it's a postdoc, going to a company or going to government, or a master's graduate ending up here in a company or in the government. So we are very happy to see that happening. We have put CIC based on a model that is unique in Canada. I claim it is unique. That is, no one else is doing it. We actually are a business / academic unit, meaning that we make money in order to pay the bill for academic activities. And in doing so, we have a membership scheme in place where companies can become a member of institute and in return receive services. It could be a developer company who is building something, we can get on and help them to build it. Or it could be a user company like financial institutions. They have problems, issues, etc., that they want us to work on for them. So we're working for both groups, developer companies and user companies. Right now we have IBM, TD, Bell, Scotia, Huawei, Siemens, NRC, CCTX, CIRA. These are our members or collaborators. And as we speak, I think we have 15 major projects going on with these collaborators. And many of them, some of them are multi-year projects that we are undertaking. And the best thing that comes out of this operation is training our students while studying here, working on a project with industry, that once they have finished the work, they are very much ready for work, employable. And we also, through this, as Luigi mentioned, give our industry partner the first crack of testing our students and then offering an extending a letter of offer for full-time job. And that's a good thing. We, through this process, we are, of course, having difficulties because our exit is very, very quick. Those who come to us quickly exit to industry and government and other places, and we have to keep replacing them. So our average people that stay with us, postdocs, research associates, and others, is 11 months. So in every 11 months, we have to actually replace them because they end up going somewhere. And we're happy to seeing that happening because this is our job. We're supposed to be a tunneling, basically is bringing people talented and train them and ship them to industry and government. And it's happening that at CIC, not to say that we forget about our fundamental and curiosity and innovation research. We actually have 20 different agreement with institution across the globe, with different institution from Australia to North America, and we do a lot of outreach activity with them through various projects or exchange, etc. That we, of course, right now with COVID, it slowed down, but this is something that we also have part of our activities, the outreach. And the other thing that CIC does, besides the training that we mentioned, the graduate and undergraduate specialization and RICS program, we also do a lot of outreach awareness program. We go in front of the different group for a short period of time to make them aware how to stay safe in cyberspace. This has been happening quite a bit. When the COVID wasn't around, it slows down, but we hope that, again, we could get on and doing that, those kind of services, which is a kind of a free service, our contribution to the society to make sure that we help to increase Canadian cyber hygiene when they are on cyberspace.
So let's just keep it real for our listeners. You said there's 66 people. When you think about that number, I suspect that there are a number of people going, holy cow, I had no idea there was this level of talent happening and being built at UMB. Is this being replicated in other parts of the country? How far ahead have we been at starting to build this infrastructure?
So we, of course, have compared to other jurisdictions or places, we do have, we enjoy the benefit of being in this area for over 20 years. So when we started the institute, I had a team of 16 people that moved to CIC, to the new institute. But we actually increased that to this level, 400% increase, because of this vision that we put in place in terms of membership working with industry and expanding it. We are definitely are the first in Canada in terms of the way we structured an institute within academic university, how it functions. We are definitely have the largest, one of the largest network security group working with companies. In terms of concentrated a group in one place, I would say we are probably at the top of the list. There are other universities with huge capacity. I don't want to discredit that, but they are also scattered around in different departments. So you could name a couple of universities in Canada that they have way more cybersecurity researchers than we have, but it's around different departments. We have actually all of them in one place at CIC. And our way of working with industry is totally unique. I don't know of any other institute like us that has this model in place, membership model in place, and works directly with members.
So, Luigi, you've got to see this as a value add component when you are recruiting for both your undergrad degree students as well as your master's students, when you're able to talk about this concentration of talent, the research that's happening, the collaboration that's happening. How do you take advantage of that? Because you sure as heck should be.
Well, there's a number of ways in which this happens. The first one is simply having a center of excellence like the CAC and making sure that stories about the CAC and their successes are actually very well understood and widespread makes a big difference. So in that sense, that is an excellent start. The other thing that is very important is that although the CIC and the faculty are two different entities and to a certain extent separate, there is a lot of connection between them because faculty members that belong to the Faculty of Computer Science are in fact affiliated and work within the Canadian Institute of Cybersecurity, which makes it possible for us to, first of all, have a little bit of transfer of some of the experiences that happen at the CAC into, for example, our courses, both undergraduate and graduate, beyond what happens with the Master of Applied Cybersecurity or with the cybersecurity specialization that we have in our undergraduate program. It also allows for students to understand and learn more about the CIC, about cybersecurity, and about the opportunities they have while they are studying with us to create and work in a completely open but much more targeted kind of environment, which is the Canadian Institute for Cybersecurity. And finally, I have to add as well that a large number of, well, not only graduates, but also people that work around the technology that supports the faculty and the CAC get involved with both. So when Ali was talking about the fact that in 11 months he needs to replace just about everybody because everybody leaves, that isn't actually something that extends only to the postdocs and the students. I mean, system administrators graduate from the Canadian Institute of Cybersecurity and go work in the industry outside, and they too have to be replaced. So there's a sort of a pipeline of talent pool that comes partially from the Faculty of Computer Science, partially from other universities as undergraduate students that then come and become graduate students with us, and goes into the CIC and is offered and finds new opportunities, many of those opportunities in here. But even when we send someone outside of New Brunswick, what we are doing is we're sending an ambassador. The experience that they have here is something that will attract other people to come over. So I can't say that there is a direct line that transforms what happens in the Canadian Institute of Cybersecurity into a megaphone that attracts people directly. But what happens usually is that the products, be it projects, papers, and people, in fact, have a much, much stronger effect in turning the tides and making sure that the CIC is a star that is well known outside and inside the University of New Brunswick.
I love that answer because it really does show us how, even in the early days when someone is thinking about coming and starting in a computer science degree, they can see some of those opportunities right here in the same institution. So I want to finish up talking about another program. So we've talked about the Masters of Applied Cybersecurity. We've learned all about what's happening at the CIC and what the heck that place is. So we've got that covered. Now we've also got a program that you've developed together, working with a significant partner, Bell, and it's Bellette's. The day that we're recording this is Bellette's Talk Day, which is really a special day every year, this time every year. Tell us a little bit about the BRICS program and the vision of how that came together, and what do you hope to accomplish? I'll start with you, Ali.
Sure. Kathy, can I add two more small points on what I said? Because this is, I would do a disservice to CIC if I don't mention them. CIC also heavily involved in open source technologies, and many of our technologies are used by researchers and our peers across the world. And some of our, especially data sets or the network traffic monitoring technology, used by at least 1,000 universities from across the globe. We have a stats for that. So that's one. And then second is the CIC has been very much involved in creating different cybersecurity ecosystem within the in the globe. And starting with ourselves, that we want it to be ecosystem, meaning that we want it to involve government, industry, and academia, bring them together to work in cybersecurity. This is the definition I have for ecosystem. All three legs should be there. So we actually helped an organization called Global Epic. We are one of the four founders with Israel and Canada, United States, and UK, which has now more than 30 countries members in that organization. And our latest activity, which I spearhead the creation of a National Cybersecurity Consortium in Canada, we call it NCC, University of New Brunswick, us with Waterloo, Concordia, Ryerson, and Calgary, we came together and created this consortium, which right now has over 143 researchers from across the country under this umbrella with 32 universities. Our first order of business is to go after the $80 million funding that the government, federal government, identified in 2019 budget. We are gearing up to apply for that funding for this consortium that will be divided among different researchers across the country. So, coming to RICS, answering your question, that's dear in my heart because I always wanted to, beyond this master's degree, I wanted to see how. Now they have hands-on training, they have fundamental, they have a bit of industry exposure. How can we can expand it to a training after which we can claim that the people that come out of this program would now know how to solve a problem for a specific industry. And at the same time, these graduates also have soft skills that normally industry are looking for, like project management, like communication, a bit of accounting, how numbers work in different situations. So we wanted to have the mix of the two. So, of course, the fundamental was that we wanted to include lectures, practical training sessions, site visits, mentorship, that CIC and industry partner provides. But we also wanted to bring these people to this 4 months training that could take on problems that industry brings in. We take them from the very initial defining it, finding a methodology, solving it, solve it, and test and validate it and give it to the industry. So this person after this 4 months doesn't need further training from that industry partner. So in this case, Bell doesn't need to spend one day when the person goes to the job because we actually did the work for them. We actually, what they do normally, they bring people, they spend a couple of months to get the person up to speed to understand how their platform works, what type of problems. We are doing it all in RICS. So RICS is a hands-on training on a bunch of specific problem solving for the industry, as well as soft skills that in most industry, if not all, asking us, does your student understand how to communicate? Can they go in front of the people and talk about? So these two come together in RICS, and I have a huge hope for RICS to become kind of a model, because this basically takes care of the very need of the industry for training a person to do work that they want to do. And then at the same time, the person that has enough soft skills, they're happy with the performance of the person.
And Luigi, it's another value proposition for your Masters of Applied Cybersecurity program.
Yes, indeed. That's, however, just the start. RICS is something new, something that we haven't seen before, something that could be transformed and expanded to make sure that the universities start to acquire the kind of skills that usually they don't have. So if you think about a normal degree, what we create is a flexible possibility for an individual to go work anywhere they want. And that's excellent. I believe that it's extremely important for the quality of learning and also for the quality of life afterwards in terms of a career. But what you find sometimes is missing the type of experience that allows someone to become productive immediately. Of course, co-op experiences help a lot, and experiential learning in those kinds of terms is very helpful. But it's not enough, because of course we need to focus on very specific tools, very specific processes, and of course sometimes very specific soft skills that need to be honed a little more before they can be perfectly compatible with an industrial texture. So once we have the model for doing that, then we can open it up, create what we consider a small certification that becomes actually a module that can be added on top of just about anything we want. Now we are testing it for CIC, and the idea came, in fact, from the CIC. So to a certain extent, I expect that I'll have to pay royalties for it. But on the other hand, I think that it's a fantastic example of what true experiential learning can become when it is something that becomes a real partnership between the sector itself and post-secondary education. So I'm all for it.
And the exciting thing is you've got Bell, who's a critical partner in this, that they're working with these students. They're offering employment with the students that get into this part of the program. You've got to be excited about that, Ali.
Yes, I am. And I think it's a validation of the vision that we put in place, that if you produce good results for industry partner, not just do research, but actually provide solutions that they actually can use and appreciate, then they would come back with more opportunities. And Bell would be one of them. Bell is our member. We do a lot of research and development for them. One of my colleagues who's helping with that project with Bell mentioned that yesterday that we actually produced 5 different technologies that for Bell as a part of their membership. So this would be something else that they actually have endorsed and came on board. And this would be, I'm hoping, and I started the process of expanding it to other our members, financial institutions like TD, Scotia, and others, and also other members. Absolutely, this is something, I mean, I don't want to use the word because it's a bit, one of my colleagues actually used it. It's called we call it a boutique training. RICS is a boutique training with a kind of a something that is hasn't been done the way that we're thinking of.
Well, if there's anything I would tell you as we finish up here is we hear over and over again how much the private sector wants to have students coming out of post-secondary with skills they can put directly into their work. And it's not just the technical skills, but it's also all those employability skills. So you're trying to get very focused on that. And I think your students are going to benefit from it, and you'll find more employers wanting to work closely with you. Look, it's just been an absolute pleasure to have you both here today so we could dive into all the great work that you're doing there. We want to learn more about the research that's coming out of there, and we wish you the best of luck to keep building, Ali and Luigi.
Kathy, can I mention one thing? Because you did mention it, and I totally forgot that at CIC, we have people from 11 different countries. We can claim that we are the most multicultural, one single unit you can find. And that's not only by itself is productive and positive from the culture and different type of training, that from different type of training, they're coming together and complementing each other. But at the same time, I want to plug in that government have to realize that this is the best way of recruitment immigration. You bring high quality people who have already been trained in their country with a bachelor degree, we bring them here, and 95 plus, my experience shows, a plus percent of them stay within the country. Many of them here, but overall within the country. And you can't find a better way of bringing high quality people here to the program that we have put in place. So I'm very excited about that.
And who knows? Maybe the next dean of engineering will actually come from that pool. It worked for Ali, it worked for me, so why not?
Well, I'm imagining a post-COVID happy hour at the CIC and the buffet of food options when you have that variety of multiculturalism must be amazing. So let's imagine we're going to get there soon enough and we can celebrate.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. It's just been a pleasure.
Same here. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy. It's always a pleasure.
What I always find fascinating is how much there is to learn about what's happening here in Atlantic Canada, and in this case, at UMB, in terms of growing our cybersecurity talent. Luigi and Ali are two of our cyber leaders, and they have a passion for experiential learning, collaborating with industry, and building talent that graduates and has that solid foundational elements of cybersecurity so they can apply these learnings in a real-world situation. More and more, we hear about how important experiential learning is to education and growth, and our guests shared how much of a priority they have made this at the University of New Brunswick. In the show notes, we'll have links to the programs we discussed today. And right now, the university continues to take applications for the Masters of Applied Cybersecurity program starting in September. Thanks for listening and for learning with us on the show today.
Tech Talks is brought to you by Tech Impact. Learn more at techimpact.it. The podcast is hosted by Tech Impact CEO Kathy Simpson. It's produced by me, Matt George. It's engineered by the great Zachary Peltier and is part of the Unsettled Media podcast network.